Diaz, welcome to Newsworks Tonight. What convinced you to get into this race?
Well, you know, I was watching a football game, and I realized I got to get into this debate about the school system because the school system is so bad, and they're hurting our kids that it hurt me. And so I felt that if I wanted to do something about it, I had to become the mayor of the city to change the SRC, which is reform. It says in the middle, but it's done no reform in 13 years.
Right. This was the current structure. We have three appointees by the governor, two by the mayor run the school system. Do you think changing the governance is the key to making this thing?
Well, part of it is changing the governance because you got a patronage issue there with whoever the governor is, one. Two, the reform issue is necessary in terms of breaking down the school system because the bureaucracy is too big. And lastly, you need some answerability between the principals, the teachers, and the school board. And that doesn't happen today.
Okay. Now, you know there's a terrible funding problem. We've had three property tax increases, a sales tax increase, a new cigarette tax. And even now the district says they're $80 million short of what they will need next year to continue the wretched state of the schools as they are. How do you solve the funding problem?
Funding is probably fundamental to a lot of what happens in the school system. We need pre-K in terms of a full educational process. The schools that work have kids from 3 to 8 where they learn 50% of what they need to know, and then it gets easier as they go through the process. So someone has to fund that. Now, the question you ask is, well, we've had all these problems. Now, the ABI, which was just done, which is the recent market rate, basically it was applied, in my opinion, wrong because you've got all of these appeals that are going on within the residential community, and then the commercial community got their valuations a lot lower than the comparison to the residential. So there's a disconnect.
For our listeners, we're talking about the change in the basis for property tax assessments in the city. You're saying it let businesses off the hook too
easily. Right. Left it. And so we have to begin how to do that correctly. Secondly, we have to have a full funding process throughout the state. One of the issues is that almost 100% of the kids happen to be minorities, African-American and Latinos in the public school system. Some of the charters have taken some of the good kids, and sort of abandoned the rest of the public education process. We have to be able to educate everyone. Everyone deserves a good education. And just by siphoning out what they consider to be the prime kids and leaving everybody else behind, we're going to have to pay later for the problems that will be created as a result of not having kids with an education.
So this is a difference between you and some other people in this race who lean towards expanding charter schools. You think that's not the way to go?
Well, if you remember, the real reason for charters were to be an incubator of what works. Once you had an incubator of what works, then you could adapt that into the regular school system. They haven't adapted any of the good things that have worked in some of the school systems. So it hasn't been used as an incubator. It's used as an alternative to education and to the public education of the kids that are left behind.
So we need to learn more about what works, replicate models that are successful. And on the money issue, you're saying that really has to be resolved at the state level?
Well, not only the state. We've got to have a fair tax basis in the city where the business community essentially, you know, participates. Secondly, you've got to have a full funding base in the state. I think it's a civil right issue because what you're doing is if you go to Lower Merion, you got a kid that they fund close to $23,000 per kid, and you come to Philadelphia, and you're funding, you know, like $300 per kid. So there is, in my opinion, a civil rights issue with regard to that lack of educational opportunities for the bulk of the children that are in the Philadelphia school system. So if we can't get an equitable funding process, I think a lot of the civil rights have been violated of these kids, and that's why I say it's a crime what they're doing to these kids. Because the minimum you could do is teach them how to read and write and math. That's the minimum. And they're leaving without those fundamental areas that you need just to get a job, to write an application. And so that is very, very hurtful to me. And it hurts me so much that, you know, emotionally I've had to get involved in this debate, in this race, and a race that I think is one that education is sort of a secondary to most of the candidates. I mean, they talk about vouchers, and if you have a voucher, you can only take that voucher to a school that will take it at that amount. So let's assume you go to Germantown Friends, and you take the voucher to Germantown Friends, and you have to pay $14,000 for your education per year, and you take a $6,300 voucher. They're not going to accept that. Somebody's got to make up the difference. So you're basically leaving the poor kids behind again.
You say that a good education is a civil rights issue, and I will respectfully note that you and I have seen this played out over a lot of years. We've seen lawsuits arguing that the state has a constitutional responsibility to do more. It's all come to nothing. What will change it?
Yeah, I think you got to go to the federal government and be able to file a federal lawsuit if that doesn't happen, and I would. Secondly, we have to begin making sure that there are curriculas, and I'm not saying about subject matters, but if you educate the kid in those areas that I told you, pre-K through, and then if you have a continuum of education where you can follow the kid, and then you have a parent relationship, and I'm not talking about a mother relationship, but to a parent relationship, someone in the household where you have a contractual relationship that, one, they have to be answerable in terms of the kid's education. And, I know teachers that come in, they don't even have a piece of paper the first day they start school. And then I go down the road to the state of Delaware, and the kids go home with an iPhone. And that's how they get their homework. We are behind in a newly technological society. And so if you educate the kids with fundamentals of the 19th and 20th century, they're never going to be able to compete in the 21st century.
You said you talked about a relationship of accountability with the parent. Are you saying that the school district ought to take some legal action against parents who aren't responsible for their kids?
No, what I feel essentially is that the teacher should have some ability to know what's going on with each kid in his or her class, then to be able to discuss that with a parent, quasi-parent, grandparent, someone who feels the responsibility to help the child.
But you're not talking about a legal punishment.
I'm talking about a contract, but a contract essentially that loosely makes the person feel obligated to the teacher and to the child so that there is some accountability in terms of what the child needs, because the child may be having problems at home. There may be issues of addiction. There may be issues of lack of food. There may be issues of lack of sleep. There may be issues that the teacher is unaware of, and if we could at least provide some kind. For example, for me, I was monolingual. My only language is Spanish, so I couldn't compete. So I lost my first 3 years of school. I learned English in third grade, and then I started to be catching up all along the way. I was a discipline problem, and all of a sudden at 15 years old, the light bulb went on. And from a D student 1 year, I became an A student because the system was still there for me to provide me tutoring, assistance, and a progress. In addition to that, my only goal was to get a job. So we have vocational education in the school. So I took typing, bookkeeping, and some of those areas that were still marketable in my community. If we essentially educate the kids who may not want to go to college for a marketable job, at least we'll keep them off the streets.
You spent most of your career in the legal system one way or another. What experience do you have that shows us you'll be a good mayor? It's a big job.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have been an executive also. I was a general counsel of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and I reformed public housing in the entire country. I took what was known as the Diaz opinion and was able to develop market rate units. You want to see an example of it? Go to Martin Luther King or go to Raymond Rosen Housing. It essentially made housing more livable and allowed developers, private developers, to partner with the housing authority to expand the opportunities of housing in a community, and also allowed people with market rate, which means somebody, some family that could afford it with a family that was poor, so that you had models of people who were working, who were doctors, lawyers, and so forth.
I've heard you mention that before. Now, you were the general counsel for HUD, its top lawyer, not normally a policymaking role. How was it that you were initiated this thing?
There were 23 lawsuits, civil rights lawsuits, and Henry Cisneros, who was then secretary, says, Nelson, I want you to get rid of all these lawsuits. And at the time, there was a HOPE 6 program that was passed by Congress. I use
to provide funding for
to provide funding for renewable housing. So what I did was I used the $6 billion of that to essentially settle 23 of those lawsuits. And one is obvious here, the one in Chester Housing Authority that Judge Shapiro just released recently. So she maintained, hold, and controlled the housing for over 20 years so that it would be managed appropriately and brought in someone from the court that essentially had a guy named Rosenthal who had absolutely authority from the court to manage it. In Dallas, another example, which is the last one that I settled. In Dallas, there was a high-riser in a distant part near a smelt factory. No transportation, no schools, and all the contamination that was coming out of that. That suit was there for 12 years. I was able to resolve the lawsuit, get rid of that high-riser, move people into less density, and where there was transportation and where there were schools, and we used the HOPE 6 program again to resolve and pay for those things. So I was just very, very fortunate that I understood the court system, having been a judge. And I understood that by having a court run it, you have less political interference in the management of the public housing.
You got a primary election in 3 months. It takes a lot of money to make yourself known. You got into the race a little late. Your campaign finance report didn't have the kind of money you're going to need to run a big TV ad campaign. How do you make a go of it?
The process has been incredibly supportive on the national Latino community. I've gotten support from Washington, Los Angeles, Puerto Rico, Florida. So my support base is a lot broader than just Philadelphia. People want to see a Latino mayor in one of the top cities of the country in the Northeast. It hasn't happened ever. So that's the first thing. Secondly, because of that issue, I've been asked to go a lot of places to recover some of that money. And because you have this limitation of $2,900 per individual.
That's the city contribution limit.
The city limits. Because you have that limitation, you have to see and feel a lot of hands and a lot. So the same problem that I have will be had by all the other candidates. One. Two, I am very serious because I believe that I will have hundreds of thousands of people coming from New York, Washington, Chicago, Puerto Rico on election day to help me bring out the voters. I have people who will come out from the Star community that will come out and try to make sure that our community comes out. So our fashion is, hey, get a higher percentage of Latino votes, get a higher percentage of the African-American votes, particularly in the Northwest, and then you go to the Asian community that I've worked in because of the stadium issue. You go into, I'm the head of the Latino-Jewish Coalition, so you work into in terms of the Jewish community. So I get pockets of a lot of little communities that I think develops a coalition, which we call a real rainbow coalition, not like the one that we see on TV, but a real rainbow coalition. And then I think we could unite our folks together and decide that we have to fix education because that's the first thing you have to do in order to grow your economy. Once you do that, and once you do some workforce development, then you begin growing your economy. You know, we're next to last in bringing small businesses to Philadelphia. You know who the last one is? Detroit. So you can imagine, we are a heck of a lot better city than Detroit. We have a lot more to offer, and we're next to two of the biggest cities in the country that people want to see, whether it's New York or Washington, D.C. So I think we have a great opportunity. The economy is starting to come back, and we have to provide capital to these small businesses so they can get into the next 21st century. We've talked about an energy hub, and we've talked about increasing the opportunities in terms of the internet and the issues relating to the new development of businesses in that area. I think I can do that, and I think I can also bring international businesses back here. You know, I've been pretty much all over the world, whether it's Spain, Peru, Colombia, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic. You know, there is an opportunity, I think, to essentially expand those relationships as they do in Chicago. And so I think we need to do similar things here in Philadelphia.
Nelson Diaz, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Oh, Dave Davis, you are wonderful. I've known you for so long, and you know, as you know, I've always been a fan of yours, and I thank you for giving me this opportunity.
All right, terrific. Thank you.